This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, and on today's program, we've been talking about the president's recent executive order on immigration and its effect on higher education. As Trump continues to sign more executive orders, it is likely the travel ban won't be the only change to immigration policy. In his campaign, Trump said he plans to get rid of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. It's also known as DACA. The program was implemented in 2012, and it allows young adults who came to the U.S. illegally as children to receive a two-year renewable protection from deportation, and it allows them to receive a work permit, driver's license, and Social Security number. Since the election, Donald Trump has suggested he won't roll back DACA entirely. Here he is last week with David Muir on ABC talking about the future of DACA recipients.
They shouldn't be very worried. They are here illegally. They shouldn't be very worried. I do have a big heart. We're going to take care of everybody. We're going to have a very strong border. We're going to have a very solid border where you have great people that are here that have done a good job. They should be far less worried.
That's Donald Trump last week talking to David Muir on ABC. In North Carolina, almost 27,000 people are DACA recipients. Many of them are anxiously waiting to see what will come of the program. Joining me now to talk more about DACA and its impact on young adults is Evelyn Smallwood. She's a Durham-based immigration attorney. Welcome back, Evelyn. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Also with us is Jasmine Garcia Rico. She is a graduate student at UNC School of Social Work and has been a DACA recipient since 2012. Hello, Jasmine.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Evelyn, let me start with you and kind of get a little bigger picture here to tell us about DACA and its benefits. Remind us sort of what this program did, who it covers.
Sure. So DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, is a benefit that President Obama offered beginning in 2012. And it was for children who entered the United States, or for people rather, who entered the United States before reaching the age of 16 and who were born on or after June 15th, 1981. And the people had to have been in the United States since June 15th, 2007. So at that point in 2012, it was people who had been there for at least 5 years. And again, that had arrived in the United States before turning 16, so 15-year-olds. And then they had to have either been in school or graduated from school or gotten a GED. And they had to have a no to minimal criminal record. Things like traffic violations, but anything more severe than that could also kick somebody out of the DACA program.
And according to a report by the Center for American Progress, that if you ended this program, it would mean a loss here in North Carolina of $1.1 billion in GDP. Tell us more about the economic benefit. Set aside what it means for people to be able to continue with their education. What would be the economic cost of eliminating this program?
Right. So the benefit of this program is that those who apply for and qualify for DACA is that they get an employment authorization. And so that employment authorization allows them to lawfully be in the workforce. And so you have North Carolina employers who are relying on these DACA holders to perform their work and to do their jobs. And in addition, we as, you know, citizens of North Carolina are also relying on the services or the benefits that they provide as lawfully employed individuals in our state.
You have represented DACA recipients, of course, with a range of backgrounds. Give us an idea, give us a sense of the range of individuals who have benefited by this program.
Right. So, I mean, I've had clients from China who have gotten deferred action for childhood arrivals. I've had many clients who are from, South America, North America, Central America, and even some from Europe as well. And I will say that this is a wonderful population of people to work with and a wonderful population of people to represent. Just by virtue of the requirements alone, you are talking about people who are wonderful contributing members of society. At a minimum, they are pursuing an education. Most are high school graduates, if not college graduates. They are law-abiding citizens, but for the fact that they were brought into the United States against their will when they were children. And so they tend to be, you know, rule followers, good, wholesome people. I've had clients who are like I said, from all over, and they're really here, and they're benefiting us as United States citizens, as part of our community and a legitimized part of our workforce.
Jasmine, tell me more about your experience. You're a DACA recipient, which you've had since 2012. What was it like to acquire benefits? What was the difference for you? Clearly, you had hoped to stay here. You had probably planned to stay here one way or another. What difference did it make for you to get that certification?
DACA for me changed my life. I came to the U.S. Undocumented, and I went through high school not knowing how to access higher education. That was really a struggle for me. Somehow I was able to make it to Guilford College in Greensboro, a private college. And just that process was really, really hard. Just to be in school, thought that I might be, you know, kicked out, that I would not be able to pay next semester. And once I graduated, I felt like all my sacrifices were worth it, you know, having a diploma on my hands. But after walking through stage, that I felt like that was it. I didn't have access to a work permit that I could use to work and use my degree. I couldn't join the workforce. And that was really, really hard for me for a few months. I was out of, you know, school for a year and a half before DACA came out. And once DACA was announced, I didn't think about it twice. I applied right away. I know some people were afraid of what that really meant, trusting the system. But I just knew that I had been risking all along, and I wouldn't lose anything just by trying. So I applied for DACA, and I received DACA in November of 2012. And I joined a student action with farm workers, a nonprofit here in Durham, in December. So for me, having the opportunity to have a work permit, a driver's license, a social security number really changed my path. I was able to join a wonderful organization that looks for the better of the community, farm workers, social justice, and that's where my heart was, contributing back. And I was able to do many things, just driving without having fear of getting a ticket, being able to get on a plane and travel to different states. I was able to, through advanced parole, a travel permit, go back to Mexico and see my dad, who I hadn't seen in 12 years. So it really dramatically changed my life, allowed me to gain experience professionally that later brought me to the School of Social Work at UNC.
I'd like to get a little better picture of what it was like before that. You grew up in Alamance County, which, of course, had a history of deporting people. It was pretty rough on immigrants. Tell us what it was like for you and your community in Alamance County.
It was really hard. Being in high school, I did driver's ed class. And once I finished, I was not even able to get my driver's permit because at that time they stopped giving it to undocumented immigrants. So that was kind of the point for me where I knew that my life was going to be hard, not having any kind of ID. A lot of friends and family, not family, but a lot of friends and people in my community were deported. I had friends who lost parents. There was a lot of fear. And so I really understood why many students were not even thinking about higher education, because you're just trying to stay safe. You're just trying to make it day by day. So it's really hard to stay motivated and to focus in school when you know that any day you can lose your parents. Driving back and forth later on to Guilford College, and going home over the weekends, it was really scary to think that I could be pulled over and be deported with 287G and secure communities in place. So there was definitely a lot of fear. A lot of people lost jobs when E-Verify was enforced even more. So there was a crisis in my community where people just didn't know, you know, if you would make it the day after.
Evelyn Smallwood, I wonder what you see as your role as a lawyer. You talked about, you know, Jasmine is telling us about the dangers, and there are people who don't have the ability, even now, who aren't covered by DACA, to get a driver's license. They have to get back and forth to work. They're contributing to our economy. They're paying taxes. Taxes are coming out of their paycheck. Taxes are going into Social Security. They're not going to ever see that money. So all of that is happening. They're paying rent, and that's property tax as well. And yet, they're so vulnerable because they don't have a license. And you know about this. What kind of legal advice do you give to people who are simply forced to act illegally?
Obviously, I get asked that question a lot as an immigration attorney. And what happens typically is that when I meet with somebody face to face and they kind of explain to me what their situation is, then it's my job as an attorney to analyze what their options are. And, you know, what I tell people typically is that people are quote unquote illegal, which I don't like to say. I don't like to say that people are illegal, but just using that, you know, that term, they're illegal until they aren't. And I think that Jasmine is a really good example, that she had a benefit that was available to her, and she applied for that benefit, and she has flourished with that benefit. And that's the same with any of my clients. I mean, I have clients who have lived in the United States for a number of years without any form of documentation, and then they become eligible for a visa. And then it's my job as an attorney to make them eligible or to help them to obtain that benefit, and then, you know, to give them a chance to flourish with that benefit. And so my role as an attorney is to use the law in order to help people get that documentation.
Jasmine, you talked about going to graduate school, or you graduated from Guilford College. Mm-hmm. What made you choose, and this was before you had DACA status, what made you choose Guilford?
Well, a friend of mine in high school, he was a senior and he went to Guilford. He was also in my situation. So I thought if he got accepted into this school, I probably have a high chance. So I followed his path. I went to Guilford College because I knew that they would not require me to pay out of state tuition. Being a private school, I did get some sort of scholarships that helped me to finance the 4 years, but it was really challenging because tuition goes up every year. So that was my best option, but it was not something that every student has a chance to do. And I decided Guilford, and I am really happy with that choice because it really prepared me to be involved in the social justice movement. Being a Quaker school, I was part of the Bonner Scholars Program, which really provided me a family, students from low income, from different backgrounds that understood that a lot of us face discrimination in many ways. So that really helped me to become who I am.
Evelyn?
I just wanted to say that, as Jasmine pointed out, she had to go to school and she had to pay for her own tuition. And I just wanted to say that that remains true under DACA, that those who have DACA do not have access to public benefits. They don't have access to federal student loans and that sort of thing. And so it is not a situation where they're being able to access things the same way that a lawful permanent resident or a citizen would be able to do. And I think it's important for the greater community to know that.
Yeah, we should point that out. You're going, Jasmine, now to the UNC School of Social Work. But as Evelyn pointed out, even with DACA, you are paying out-of-state tuition,
yes,
even though you live here. So you're not granted that benefit. Tell us about that, though. Why go to UNC, and where do you plan to go next? What are your plans now?
So that decision was really hard for me, trying to go back to school, because I knew that I was in the same situation as before when I didn't have DACA. I wanted to be part of a profession that believes in social justice, that wants diversity, inclusion, and equity. And so I knew that my heart was in social work. At the same time, I knew that it was going to be as hard or even harder than before. Out-of-state tuition for a graduate program is about $33,000 for social work. And so I had to really knock different doors, many doors in the community, many people that believed in me and provided me moral support, financial support. And that's how I was able to make it to the School of Social Work. So I really hope that I can continue working for social change in my community. I plan on staying in North Carolina. However, since the last couple months, I really have had a hard time staying positive and keeping in mind that I will be able to stay and that I will be able to use my degree if I am able to graduate, because the future for us is really uncertain. So if I lose my work permit, I'm not going to be able to work as a research assistant. I'm not going to be able to help cover for my tuition. And I am at risk for deportation. So a lot is up in the air for me.
I should also point out that at $33,000 a year for a graduate program, and someone who has enjoyed scholarships because of your academic status and capability, you could have chosen graduate programs that will allow you to pay that off a lot faster than social work. I will tell you, there are other professions that you could have gone into, and you'll be a long time paying it off in a social worker's salary, but you've chosen that. Let me ask you now, you just heard Donald Trump say he's got a big heart. and that you shouldn't worry, that the people who are doing well here, that he seems to be changing his mind. Are you convinced that he's not going to touch this program?
I do not believe that one bit. Just this weekend, we saw that he can do a lot of damage to people who have documentation, to people who have residence, to people who have visas. So just to believe that he is going to have a good heart for undocumented people, for DACA students, it's just hard to believe. I am afraid, not just for myself, for the people that I know, for my friends, for family, for everyone who is in this country and that has given their best and is still seen as foreign, as not good enough. So even if I want to stay hopeful, I don't believe that we should be fine and that we are protected.
I want to thank both of you today for being on our program. Jasmine Garcia-Rico is a graduate student at UNC's School of Social Work and a DACA recipient. Evelyn Smallwood is an immigration attorney based in Durham. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You can find out more about this show and about the topics we've discussed at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Ormond, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wadarski is sitting in today. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.